March 18th, 2009. York, England. 35-year-old Claudia Lawrence speaks on the phone with her parents and texts her best friend about meeting for drinks the following evening. When Claudia fails to show up for work the next morning and misses her meetup with her friend, she is subsequently reported missing. The investigation would uncover allegations that Claudia was involved in some secret relationships which could have led to her disappearance. Over the next decade, a number of different men are arrested on suspicion of murder, but none of them are formally charged, and no trace of Claudia is ever found. After that, the trail went cold.
Now, Ray, there's something you want to talk about tonight that you haven't spoken about in public before. You think it could be the key, that there are areas of Claudia's life that are delicate, to say the least, and definitely complex. Tell us what it is you want to say.
As the investigation has developed, it's apparent that some of Claudia's relationships had an element of complexity and mystery to them. I'm certain that some of those relationships were not known to a family or a friend. I need to know the details of those relationships. In fact, I do know details of some of them, and I would urge anybody that was involved in a relationship with Claudia or knew of one that a friend, a colleague, a neighbour was involved in, please, if they're going to be discreet and if they want to actually enable us to deal with it in a controlled way, in a confidential way, they need to pick up that phone and give the call tonight.
You see, some people might think they're protecting Claudia and they're protecting Claudia's reputation, but it's far, far more important than that if indeed we are talking here about murder. I mean, you do want to hear from people who even have suspicions about other people. That would be useful to you at this stage.
Absolutely. I'm not here to judge Claudia's relationships. I'm here to investigate them. I need people to share that information with me.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and this week we are traveling across the Atlantic to the United Kingdom to explore one of their most prominent unsolved missing persons cases, the 2009 disappearance of Claudia Lawrence. That sound clip you just heard was from an episode of the British true crime TV program, Crime Watch, featuring an interview with Detective Superintendent Ray Galloway of the North Yorkshire Police. It was broadcast only a few months after Claudia went missing, but I don't think Galloway or anyone else realized what a profound effect his comments would have on the investigation. Anyway, Claudia Lawrence was employed as a chef at the University of York, and presumably vanished while walking to work early one morning. It would eventually become one of the United Kingdom's most high-profile missing persons cases, due largely to the controversial media coverage which surrounded it. You see, once Detective Superintendent Galloway alleged that Claudia may have been involved in a number of secret relationships prior to her disappearance, the tabloid press decided to put most of their focus on this angle and heavily sensationalized the story. As a result, a number of unflattering rumors started circulating about Claudia, and the public seemed more concerned about the lurid details of her personal life rather than the fact that she was a missing woman who may have been the victim of foul play. And another side effect of this media backlash is that it may have prevented people with information about Claudia's disappearance from coming forward. Anyway, I've received numerous requests to cover this since the inception of this podcast, and since I haven't done an episode about a case from the UK in quite a while, I thought now would be an ideal time to tackle it. Not only is this a pretty baffling mystery, but it's also a disturbing case study in victim blaming and the negative impact it can have on a missing persons investigation. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now delve into the unsolved disappearance of Claudia Lawrence. Our story begins in England in 2009. Our central figure is 35-year-old Claudia Lawrence, a single woman who lives alone in a house on Heworth Road in the city of York. Claudia and her older sister, Ally, were raised in the nearby town of Malton by their parents, Peter and Joan Lawrence, who would divorce after their children reached adulthood. Claudia eventually moved to York and currently works as a chef at the Roger Kirk Center in the University of York's Goodricke College, located 2.3 miles from her home. On March the 18th, Claudia completed her early morning shift and started heading home at 2:30 p.m., but since her car was at a garage undergoing repairs, she would have to walk, which ordinarily took around 30 minutes. At 2:50, Claudia was captured on CCTV, mailing a letter outside a post office, but she was soon picked up by a work colleague who drove her the rest of the way home. At 3:10, one of Claudia's neighbors would see her walking down the road near her house and wave to her. That evening, Claudia made separate calls from her cell phone to both of her parents. Her father, Peter, offered to lend Claudia his car to travel to work until her own vehicle was fixed, but she told him she would prefer to walk. At 8:04 p.m., Claudia called her mother, Joan, and they discussed plans to meet up for Mothering Sunday, which, in case you're not aware, is the UK equivalent to Mother's Day, and takes place in March instead of May. Joan would later say that they also talked about a TV show they were watching at that time, and she could hear this show playing in the background of the call, which implied that Claudia was phoning her from home. After the call ended, Claudia sent a text message to her best friend, Susie Cooper, at 8:23 p.m., where she made arrangements to meet Susie the following evening for a drink at the Nag's Head, a pub located just down the road from Claudia's house. But this would be the last communication from Claudia, and while her phone received a text from another friend at 9:12 p.m., it's unclear if she actually read it. Claudia was scheduled to begin her next shift at 6 a.m. on the morning of March the 19th, but she never arrived at work, and even after her boss attempted to call her cell phone numerous times, Claudia did not answer. Later that evening, Susie Cooper went to the Nag's Head for her scheduled drink with Claudia, but she never showed up for that either, and did not respond to Susie's texts or phone calls. By the following day, Susie had still not heard from Claudia, so she became concerned and contacted Peter Lawrence, who had a spare key to Claudia's house. When Peter searched the house, he found no trace of Claudia, and soon contacted the University of York. Once Peter learned that his daughter had missed her scheduled shift, he officially reported Claudia missing to the North Yorkshire Police, aka the NYP. A formal search of Claudia's house revealed that she had left a number of important items behind, including her passport, bank cards, and jewelry. The only items which appeared to be missing were her cell phone, some hair straighteners, and a rucksack which she ordinarily used to carry her chef's uniform. Since Claudia's bed was made, her electric toothbrush was on the kitchen draining board, unwashed breakfast dishes were in the sink, and her slippers were resting next to the front door. This seemed to imply that Claudia had left for her scheduled shift during the early morning hours of March the 19th, but something happened to her before she arrived. It would later turn out that Claudia's cell phone went off at 12:08 p.m. that day, and the phone's network showed that it was deliberately switched off rather than going dead because the battery ran down. In spite of this, Claudia's parents would continue to leave messages on her voicemail on the off chance she could still listen to them. Anyway, once Claudia's disappearance was reported in the media, there would be a couple of reported eyewitness sightings of her on the morning she went missing. At around 5:35 a.m., a cyclist believed they saw Claudia near an electricity substation on Melrose Gate Bridge, and she was speaking with a skinny, unidentified man smoking a cigarette with his left hand. The location was about a half mile from Claudia's house and would have been used on a route to work. Another witness also claimed to have seen a woman matching Claudia's description outside the University of York at around 6:10, arguing with a man next to a car with an open passenger side door. Claudia could not be found on any of the CCTV footage recorded that morning, including the post office where she was seen the previous afternoon. But it's worth noting that Claudia would have had to cross Melrose Gate Bridge before she reached that particular CCTV camera on her route, so the lack of footage of Claudia did not discount the sighting on the bridge. However, the CCTV footage would reveal some other interesting clues. At 5:42 a.m., a silver Ford Focus hatchback was captured driving along Heworth Road before its brake light suddenly switched on as it was approaching Claudia's house. The CCTV would also capture two separate occurrences of what appeared to be a suspicious-looking man in a black hoodie walking near the alleyway behind Claudia's house. The first occurrence actually took place at 7:15 p.m. on the evening of March the 18th, about an hour before Claudia's final phone call with her mother. The man headed in the direction of the alleyway and disappeared out of frame before reappearing 68 seconds later. He walked in the opposite direction towards Heworth Road, but when he saw another pedestrian walking down the sidewalk, he came to an abrupt halt. He then waited until the pedestrian was gone before walking to the road and turning around the corner out of frame. At 5:07 a.m. on the morning of the 19th, the same camera would capture a man dressed in black walking in the exact same spot. Once again, he headed towards the alleyway behind Claudia's house and disappeared out of frame for 50 seconds before reemerging and walking away. It could not be conclusively determined if this was the same man captured on CCTV the previous night, and all attempts to enhance the footage for a clear identification were unsuccessful. Even though police sent out a public plea for this man to come forward, he never did, but some residents would express their belief that he might have been a local 57-year-old property landlord named Richard Cartwright, who would die of natural causes only 3 weeks after Claudia went missing. However, Cartwright's friends and family insisted that he was very devoted to his job, and it was not unusual for him to inspect the properties he maintained during the early morning hours. Whatever the case, investigators could not even be certain if Cartwright was the man in the CCTV footage. 6 weeks after she went missing, the NYP would officially reclassify Claudia's disappearance from a missing persons case to a murder inquiry, though they did acknowledge that they had no definitive evidence that Claudia was dead. In June, the case would be featured on the popular BBC TV series Crime Watch, and as you heard during the intro, Detective Superintendent Ray Galloway made an appearance on the show and made this surprising statement, quote, "As the investigation has developed, it's become apparent that some of Claudia's relationships had an element of complexity and mystery to them. I'm certain that some of those relationships were not known to her family and friends." End quote. Well, these comments would have a major impact on the media coverage of this case, as many of Britain's most popular tabloid newspapers, including the Daily Mail and the Sun, would put a heavy emphasis on Claudia's personal life and published a number of articles which alleged that she carried on affairs with several different men. In fact, one of the most sensational headlines stated that Claudia may have had as many as 40 secret lovers. These articles sometimes contain quotes from anonymous sources who claim that Claudia specifically conducted affairs with married men, which gave her a reputation for being a quote-unquote homewrecker. In fact, one woman was willing to go on the record and state that Claudia had carried on a 2-month affair with her husband, which caused their marriage to end in divorce. While Claudia's family and her closest friends were horrified by how she was portrayed in the media and believed that most of the allegations against her were either greatly exaggerated or downright false. At one point, Joan Lawrence stated, quote, "Everything gets twisted, and all they've done is blacken her name, and I'm not happy about that at all. 90% of what has been said about her isn't true," end quote. Peter Lawrence would even do an interview in which he expressed his own skepticism and maintained that Claudia's job and relationships with her family and friends kept her so busy that it would have been difficult for her to even find time to carry on all these secret affairs. Many people believe that Galloway's comments on Crime Watch were very detrimental to the investigation and paved the way for Claudia losing sympathy from the public because of how she was portrayed. Indeed, due to the media circus, there was a fear that many of the men from Claudia's personal life would be unwilling to speak with the police, even if they had pertinent information, because they feared a potential public backlash. One of Claudia's co-workers at the university would reveal that on the morning of March the 17th, she told him she had spent the previous night with a quote-unquote mystery boyfriend, but he has never been identified, and all attempts to get this mystery boyfriend to come forward have been unsuccessful. As you might recall, CCTV footage showed Claudia mailing a letter on the afternoon before she went missing, but once again, investigators have had no luck figuring out who or where the letter was sent to. In September, the NYP revealed that their search for Claudia had extended to the Mediterranean island country of Cyprus. Prior to her disappearance, Claudia had visited Cyprus no less than 5 times, with her last trip having taken place the previous October, and she was planning to go back there for Easter before she went missing. Claudia also knew several people who lived there, and had even received some job offers during her previous visits. At least 10 men from the island were questioned by police, and it turned out that one of them was a bar worker who had sent the final text to Claudia's cell phone on the night she vanished. However, according to Detective Superintendent Galloway, a number of these men, some of whom were married, were very reluctant to speak with them. In fact, one man would not even admit to knowing Claudia until the 3rd time he was interviewed, and even though some of them denied ever having a relationship with her, Galloway claimed he did not believe them. One of these men had even been in Britain at the time Claudia went missing, but had a difficult time establishing his whereabouts. However, given that Claudia left her passport behind at her house, it seemed very unlikely that she could have traveled to Cyprus of her own volition, so this inquiry ultimately came to a dead end. In addition to how they handled things with the media, the Lawrence family was critical about a number of mistakes made by the NYP during the early stages of the investigation. For instance, the original photograph they used on Claudia's missing poster was outdated, as it showed her with blonde hair, even though her hair had been dyed brown with auburn highlights at the time she went missing. By 2013, Ray Galloway had retired, and the investigation was taken over by Detective Superintendent Di Malin. It was around this time that the NYP announced the creation of the Major Crime Unit, aka the MCU, who would be tasked to review cold cases in which the investigations had stalled. Well, Claudia's disappearance was one of them, so new forensic searches were performed of Claudia's home and car using advanced techniques which were not available at the time she originally went missing. They wound up finding some additional, partial, unidentified fingerprints inside her house, as well as a cigarette butt containing male DNA inside Claudia's car. Thus far, all attempts to match this DNA to anyone have been unsuccessful. A more extensive search was also performed of Claudia's cell phone activity, and it would reveal that in the weeks prior to her disappearance, Claudia had spent a lot of time in Acum, a suburb of York located just under 4 miles west from Huarth Road. But the biggest development in this case would occur in 2014, when a 59-year-old York resident named Michael Snelling was arrested on suspicion of murder. Snelling lived less than a mile from Claudia's residence, and while he was employed as a project coordinator for a mental health charity, he had previously worked for the biology department at the University of York. Snelling sometimes frequented Claudia's favorite pub, the Nag's Head, and reportedly had been seen hugging her there before. Searches were performed of Snelling's home and his car, as well as a house belonging to his mother in the town of North Shields. Snelling was released on bail following his arrest, but in the end, no evidence was found to implicate him, and no charges were ever filed. In July of that year, another man would be arrested by the NYP, this time on suspicion of perverting the course of justice. The man was the landlord of a pub called the Acum, located in the same suburb where much of Claudia's cell phone activity was traced prior to her disappearance. The landlord did acknowledge that he had seen Claudia in the pub with some mutual friends about 2 weeks before she went missing, but denied any knowledge or involvement with what happened to her. The police would perform an extensive search of this pub, which included digging up the cellar, but nothing was found, and the landlord was released without charge. The next major development occurred during March and April of 2015, when four more men were arrested on suspicion of murder. All of the men, two of whom were brothers, were described as being in their 50s and frequent patrons at Claudia's favorite pub, the Nag's Head. In fact, one of their acquaintances would state that these men had taken bets on which one of them would be the first to be arrested in connection to this case. They were all released on bail, and the NYP even went so far as to submit their case to the Crown Prosecution Service. But in March of 2016, it was announced that none of these men would be charged due to lack of evidence, and the NYP openly blamed this on a lack of cooperation from witnesses. Another theory has also been pushed forward, linking Claudia's disappearance to a notorious convicted murderer. During the early morning hours of March the 19th, 2011, 22-year-old Sean O'Callaghan vanished after leaving a nightclub in the city of Swindon. 5 days later, Sean's body was discovered in a shallow grave, and that very same day, a 47-year-old taxi driver named Christopher Halliwell was arrested and charged with her kidnapping and murder. Halliwell eventually pled guilty to the crime and received a sentence of life imprisonment, but he would also be linked to the disappearance of a 20-year-old Swindon woman named Becky Godden, who had gone missing in 2003. Halliwell led the police to her body, which was also buried in a shallow grave, and he would eventually be charged with her murder as well, and received an additional sentence of life imprisonment. While there's been speculation that Halliwell is a serial killer who may have been responsible for additional murders, including Claudia Lawrence. In fact, one time when he was incarcerated, Halliwell reportedly asked his fellow inmates how many people you had to kill in order to be technically considered a serial killer. Joan Lawrence got in touch with Becky Godden's mother, Karen Edwards, who claimed she had tracked down a witness that saw Claudia speaking with a taxi cab driver matching Halliwell's description shortly before her disappearance. According to the witness, Claudia was speaking with him through the taxi window and asking if he had changed so she could phone her father from a call box. Now, even though Halliwell lived in Swindon, which is over 200 miles away from York, he was known for visiting his father in the town of Huddersfield, located about an hour from Claudia's residence. Another interesting parallel was that Sean O'Callaghan was abducted and murdered by Halliwell on March the 19th, exactly 2 years after Claudia went missing. During the 1980s, while he was serving time in prison for another crime, Halliwell's ex-girlfriend reportedly broke up with him on March the 19th, so some people have speculated that Halliwell purposely selected that date in order to inflict violence on women. However, the NYP have never found any tangible connection between Halliwell and Claudia's case, and are inclined to believe that someone she knew was responsible for her disappearance. In June of 2019, the government would formally introduce the Guardian Missing Persons Act, which became known as Claudia's Law, thanks to the relentless campaigning of Peter Lawrence. The new law would allow guardians to manage the financial and property affairs of a person who had been missing for more than 90 days, giving them the power to take such steps as stopping direct debits for their utilities. For the past 11 years, Claudia's house has continued to remain unoccupied as her family refuses to sell the home in order to keep preserving it as a potential crime scene. And they've also insisted on keeping her house exactly the way it was in case Claudia ever returns home someday. But unfortunately, Claudia continues to remain a missing person. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So I'm honestly not sure if this case is that well known in North America among anyone besides devout true crime followers, but it's certainly been a big deal in the United Kingdom. And unfortunately, like I said in the intro, it could almost be looked at as a case study and how the media can negatively impact a cold case. The number one rule you should always follow when putting together a true crime podcast is to never victim blame, and you have to remember that even if the victim did some not-so-nice things in their life, that does not mean they deserve to be murdered. When Ray Galloway made those remarks on Crime Watch about Claudia's relationships, I'm sure he didn't mean any harm, and technically, seeking more information about a missing victim's personal life is a logical step in the investigation, since it could potentially shed some more light on their disappearance. But I don't think Galloway phrased things very well, especially when he said, quote, "I'm not here to judge Claudia's relationships." Because once the British tabloids ran with the secret relationships angle, it seems like the public's perception of Claudia changed in a negative way. Now, I may not live in the UK, but I am well aware of the many issues surrounding British tabloids, such as the Daily Mail and the Sun. In fact, back when I wrote articles for Cracked and Listfirst, one of the editor's primary rules was, never use the Daily Mail as one of your sources. So while researching this case, I had to remember that if the only sources I could find for certain pieces of information were the Daily Mail or any of the other British tabloids, I should take them with a huge grain of salt. They were the ones who ran with the angle that Claudia was a homewrecker who loved going after older married men and ran headlines about her having as many as 40 secret lovers, but a lot of these claims were often backed up by nothing more than quotes by anonymous sources. There was one woman who was willing to go on the record and say that Claudia had an affair with her husband, which may be true, but it also may not have had any relevance to this case. For the most part, these allegations came across as nothing more than gossip, and Claudia's family and closest friends painted a much different picture of her. I know it's a running gag how true crime shows always try to paint the victim as a perfect angel and use cliched expressions like, they were the type of person who lit up a room, but sadly, this case kind of demonstrates why they do stuff like that. When reading posts about this case on Reddit and whatnot, I've seen a number of comments from people in the UK who claim they saw members of the public turn on Claudia when these rumors came out and say awful, hateful comments like, this is what happens when you play with fire. I hate to say this, but even if Claudia was rumored to be having affairs with a number of different men who weren't married, I'm sure some people still would have been very judgmental towards her, in spite of the fact that she was a single woman just living her life. A lot of people have said that if a male had gone missing under these exact same circumstances, the public attitude towards them probably wouldn't have been so harsh, and I definitely agree. Of course, the other big problem with Claudia's personal life becoming such a public spectacle is that it may have prevented people from coming forward with key information. For all we know, there may be some men she was involved with who had nothing to do with her actual disappearance, but fear some major repercussions if they admitted to having an affair with her, particularly if they were married. It sounds like this was a major issue when police questioned some men Claudia knew in Cyprus, even though it's unlikely that any of them were involved with what happened to her. Since 2014, no less than 6 men have been arrested in connection with this case, and while none of them have ever been charged with anything, it would not surprise me if this has created a level of paranoia within the community, prompting people to keep their mouths shut. While the North Yorkshire Police have been very tight-lipped about many aspects of this investigation, you get the impression that they have a pretty good idea about who they think was responsible, but without a body or any other incriminating evidence, they just can't make a case against anyone and desperately need the right people to talk. However, the truly ironic thing would be if Claudia was actually abducted and murdered by a random stranger, and it turned out that all of this drama surrounding her personal life was completely irrelevant. But I think that would all depend on the biggest unanswered question in this case. Did Claudia go missing while walking to work during the early morning hours, or could something have happened to her the night before? Well, the last time Claudia was confirmed to be alive was when she phoned her parents and texted her best friend shortly before 8:30 p.m. on the evening of March the 18th, but the last time anyone actually saw her was when a neighbor witnessed her walking down the street near her house about 5 hours earlier. Since Claudia was using her cell phone, theoretically, she could have been anywhere when she made those calls and texts that night. Claudia's mother has pointed out that they were both watching the same TV show during their call, and she could hear the show in the background while Claudia was speaking, so you'd assume she was phoning from her own house. But what if Claudia was actually watching that show at someone else's place? After all, she did tell a coworker that she spent the night of March the 16th with a quote-unquote mystery boyfriend, and this person has still never been identified. The main reason most people believe that Claudia left for work on the morning of the 19th is because the rucksack containing her chef uniform was missing, but if she was planning to spend the night elsewhere, she could have taken it with her beforehand. One of the oddest details of the case is that some hair straighteners were also missing, which would lend credence to the idea that Claudia grabbed them so she could adjust her hair the following morning from another location. But apparently, it was not uncommon for Claudia to take these straighteners to work with her, since working in a hot kitchen all day does not treat your hair very well, so that detail may be completely insignificant in the grand scheme of things. I do think that the other evidence in the house, such as the unwashed breakfast dishes in the sink and Claudia's slippers being near the front door, do suggest that she spent the night there. And since there were no signs of any struggle, whatever happened to Claudia probably occurred during her walk to work. Now, the investigation has so many different clues from that time of the morning, including two alleged eyewitness sightings of Claudia with an unidentified man, CCTV footage of a car hitting its brake lights near Claudia's house, and CCTV footage of a man walking towards the alleyway behind the house, both during the early morning hours and the previous night. It's possible that none of these clues have any relevance to Claudia's disappearance, and perhaps both the eyewitnesses who thought they saw her on Melrose Gate Bridge and outside the university were mistaken. The man on the bridge was described as being a left-handed smoker, a trait which matches Christopher Halliwell, but we'll talk more about him in a little while. The sighting of Claudia on the bridge took place at 5:35 a.m., so if that woman was her, then this eliminates the significance of the car with the brake lights near her house, since that took place a half mile away at 5:42. On the other hand, the sighting of Claudia arguing with the man outside the car near the university took place at around 6:10, so theoretically, the car on the CCTV footage could have picked up Claudia at her residence and driven her there before the argument ensued. Since the walk to the university would have taken her around 30 minutes, she might have been willing to accept a ride from someone if she was running late, and it would account for why there was no CCTV footage of her walking that morning. Anyway, there's also the big mystery surrounding the man outside Claudia's house at 7:15 p.m. and 5:07 a.m., and the footage just isn't clear enough to conclusively determine if they're the same person. If that was the same guy, then perhaps he was a stalker who was watching Claudia and knew her routine well enough that he was planning to abduct her when she left for work. This could explain his seemingly odd decision to suddenly stop when he saw another pedestrian walking past Claudia's house because he didn't want to be seen near that location. But the big complication is that some people believe this man could have been the property landlord, Richard Cartwright, who died only a few weeks later, before he could be formally questioned. Cartwright's friends and family have always defended him, saying that he was a workaholic who was very dedicated to properly inspecting and maintaining his properties. This would account for why he disappeared down the alleyway behind Claudia's house for about a minute before leaving the scene, and apparently, it was not even that unusual for him to do that type of inspection as early as 5 a.m. If this is true, then the whole lead was nothing more than a big red herring, but the problem is that we still can't even be 100% certain if Cartwright was the man in the footage. Another reason some people believe that something might have happened to Claudia before she left for work is that the text she received from her male friend in Cyprus at 9:12 p.m. the previous evening was apparently not read. According to her mother, Claudia had been planning to go to bed at around 9 o'clock, since she had to wake up very early for her morning shift, so it would make sense if she didn't read the text before she went to sleep. However, by all accounts, Claudia practically lived on her cell phone, So if she woke up and grabbed her phone before heading to work, would she not have checked her most recent text? It's hard to say, but what is clear is that someone deliberately turned off the phone at 12:08 p.m. on March the 19th. Given that Claudia didn't show up for her shift, and her boss kept calling her cell to find out where she was, I can see why someone would be compelled to switch it off because of the constant ringing, but the question is, did Claudia herself do this, or was it the person who harmed her? Well, I really think there's no chance whatsoever that Claudia took off voluntarily, and even though she liked to travel to Cyprus, and the NYP performed an investigation there, I doubt she could have entered the country without taking her passport along. They actually aired a new documentary about this case on British television last year, and explored the potential angle that Claudia might have become the victim of sex trafficking and was possibly smuggled out of the country. But I don't think that's likely, as 35-year-old women are generally not the primary target for sex traffickers. Sadly, I think it's safe to say that Claudia was murdered around the time she went missing, but there really isn't any strong evidence pointing to a specific perpetrator, and if there is, police have not released that information. As far as stranger abductions go, the only person who has been named as a potential suspect is Christopher Halliwell. I don't discount the possibility that Halliwell has additional victims we don't even know about yet, but I personally believe that the connections between him and Claudia are weak at best. Halliwell lived over 200 miles from York, and just because his father happened to live an hour away is not really compelling evidence that he would have frequented the city. Even though Halliwell's last victim, Sean O'Callaghan, happened to be murdered on March the 19th, the same date Claudia went missing, his only other known victim, Becky Godden, was murdered in January, so that date may not have any significance and could be nothing more than a coincidence. The main reason Halliwell popped up on the radar as a suspect was because a witness allegedly saw Claudia speaking to him through a window of his taxi cab shortly before she disappeared. But the issue is that this information wasn't uncovered during an official police investigation. This witness was tracked down by Becky Godden's mother, Karen Edwards, who soon got the ball rolling on the theory that Halliwell killed Claudia, and I have no idea how much this witness was vetted by the police. But isn't it possible that they could have been mistaken and saw another woman who resembled Claudia? And even if she was Claudia, how do we know she couldn't have been speaking to another cab driver besides Halliwell? The main reason I'm skeptical of this story is that the witness said Claudia asked the driver for some change in order to phone her father from a call box, but Claudia was completely attached to her cell phone. Unless she had forgotten it, or her battery died or something, why would she be phoning her father from a call box? There's also the fact that the man seen with Claudia on Melrose Gate Bridge was smoking a cigarette in his left hand, and Halliwell was a left-handed smoker. But again, we can't even be 100% certain that eyewitness sighting was accurate either. Now, the man who caught Halliwell was a former detective superintendent named Steve Fulcher, and he has publicly expressed his belief that Halliwell was responsible for Claudia's disappearance. But the key word here is former. You see, after Halliwell was charged with the murder of Sean O'Callaghan, Fulcher got him to confess to the murder of Becky Godden and lead him to her body in a shallow grave. But the problem is that Fulcher violated the Police and Criminal Evidence Act by failing to advise Halliwell of his rights and denying him access to a solicitor. As a result, Halliwell's confession was ruled to be inadmissible as evidence, and even though he literally led Fulcher to Becky Godden's body, he did not actually get charged or go on trial for that murder until 5 years later. Fulcher would be found guilty of gross misconduct by a disciplinary tribunal and resigned from the police force, and by the time he made those comments about the Claudia Lawrence case, he was working as a security consultant in Somalia because the scandal had pretty much made him unemployable as a police officer. So you get the impression that Fulcher might have had an agenda and is attempting to seek validation by linking Halliwell to another unsolved cold case. All I know is that the NYP have publicly stated that they haven't found any compelling evidence to suggest that Halliwell had any involvement in Claudia's disappearance, and at this point, I'm inclined to agree with that. Anyway, it seems like the investigators working the case lean towards the idea that Claudia was harmed by someone she knew, and that this was some sort of personal crime. One aspect of the investigation which I find a bit odd is that they put a lot of emphasis on a cigarette butt found inside Claudia's car, which had male DNA on it, and thus far, cannot be linked to anyone. However, since her car was actually in a garage undergoing repairs at the time she went missing, the killer would not have had access to the vehicle when they committed the crime. So obviously, a DNA match would only mean this person was inside Claudia's car at some point and is not evidence that he murdered her. But since, as far as I can tell, no one has ever come forward and admitted they left the cigarette there, the DNA could very well belong to one of Claudia's so-called secret lovers who doesn't want to admit to their involvement with her. This is the main reason why a DNA match would be useful, because even if this person is innocent, at least they can be ruled out as a suspect, and the investigation can move on and start exploring different avenues. Once again, this has been one of the police's biggest obstacles against making any headway in this case, as they have openly expressed their frustration about a lack of cooperation from witnesses. And this lack of cooperation may simply be the result of people wanting to protect secrets from their personal lives, even if they had nothing to do with Claudia's disappearance. Because of all the gossip and rumors surrounding her alleged secret affairs, there are so many different possible scenarios about what might have happened. She could have been murdered by a married man who did not want news about the relationship to get out and destroy his reputation. Another theory which has been put forward is that the perpetrator could have even been a woman who killed Claudia out of revenge for having an affair with her spouse. All we know is that there have been a total of 6 arrests connected to Claudia's case, though no one has ever officially been charged with anything. 5 of the arrests have been on suspicion of murder, while the other one was on suspicion of perverting the course of justice, and I suppose we should talk about that one first. The person in question was the landlord of the Acom pub, and I get the impression that the arrest was made because the NYP believed he was interfering with the investigation, not because they suspected him of murdering Claudia. As you recall, Claudia's cell phone activity showed that she spent a lot of time in the Acom suburb in the weeks prior to her disappearance and frequented that pub at least once. The landlord did acknowledge seeing Claudia there, and claimed this was the first time she'd been at the establishment in years, since she liked to spend the majority of her time at the Nag's Head. An extensive search of the pub turned up nothing, so even though Claudia's cell phone activity in Acom might be significant, and suggest she could have spent some time visiting someone there, I have a feeling that the pub itself has little relevance to this case. Now, the other 2 separate arrests for suspicion of murder took place about a year apart, and involved a man named Michael Snelling and 4 other men who were frequent patrons of the Nag's Head. What's interesting is that all of these men were in their 50s at the time the arrests were made, which probably fueled the rumors which were floating around that Claudia liked to go after older married men. But while the other 4 men all apparently had spouses, the curious thing is that Michael Snelling did not. He did have a connection to Claudia because he worked at her university, and they had allegedly been seen hugging at the Nag's Head. But Snelling lived alone and was not known for being involved in romantic relationships. In fact, he had a reputation for generally not bothering with women because he spent most of his free time caring for his elderly mother, who lived over 80 miles away in North Shields. That doesn't necessarily mean he couldn't have had an affair with Claudia, but it would not have drawn the ire of a jealous spouse, and Snelling wouldn't have really had anything to lose if news about the relationship went public. It's never been made clear just how well Claudia might have known this guy, but the fact that they both worked at the University of York opens up some interesting possibilities. While Claudia might not have accepted a ride from a stranger in order to travel to work during the early morning hours, she could have been comfortable enough with Snelling to accept one from him. In fact, what if he was the driver of the car seen hitting its brake lights in front of Claudia's residence at 5:42 a.m.? What if he was the man seen arguing with Claudia next to a car outside the university that morning? Well, investigators have withheld specific details about what compelled them to arrest Snelling to begin with, but they did perform searches of his car, his house, and his mother's residence in North Shields, and found no evidence to charge him. So I have no idea if Snelling might be involved or not, and I can only speculate on why he appeared on the radar as a potential suspect. However, it sounds like the arrest of the other four men is more interesting, because the NYP actually felt compelled to submit their case against him to the Crown Prosecution Service, who declined to file any charges due to lack of evidence. Once again, no details have been released about why they decided to arrest these guys, but there were rumors that they were expecting it to happen. It's unclear if Claudia may have been involved in an affair with one or more of these men, and while I'm not sure all four of them would have been directly involved in a murder, the implication seems to be that at the very least, everyone was involved in covering up the whole thing. I know that at least one of the men worked as a builder, and since the University of York was under construction at that time, one of the most common theories which has circulated around the community is that Claudia's body may have been concealed at the construction site and buried in a foundation somewhere. Well, if you want to get a better idea about my thoughts on that, listen to the episode I released last year about the disappearance of the Springfield Three and the infamous rumor that the three missing victims are buried underneath the parking garage of a local hospital. Encasing a dead body inside the concrete foundation of a building is very unlikely, as it would be quite difficult to pull something like that off undetected, and once a body decomposes, it creates an air pocket which would compromise the concrete structural integrity and potentially cause serious damage. So if you're currently attending the University of York, not to worry, I really do not believe that Claudia's body is encased there. Of course, that doesn't necessarily mean these guys did dispose of Claudia somewhere else, but with so few details available about the case against them, I can't really come to a conclusion about the likelihood of their guilt or innocence. All I know is that investigators believe that if more witnesses had cooperated with them following the arrests, they might have been able to file formal charges. I do get the impression that the NYP have their own theory about what they believe happened, but just lack the evidence to prove it. On the 10th anniversary of Claudia's disappearance, Detective Superintendent Di Malin stated, quote, "Unless we get information or intelligence to suggest that Claudia came to harm as a result of an opportunity taken by someone unconnected to her, me and the team still strongly believe that the answer lies locally," end quote. Sadly, I do fear that things may have reached the point where there's been so much drama surrounding this case that it's almost become unsolvable. In order for this case to be cracked, the right person might need to come forward, but the media and the police may have alienated the community so much that even those who might have useful knowledge about what happened to Claudia are no longer willing to talk. Even if they don't get railroaded by the police, they could still get railroaded in the media, particularly by the tabloid press and their desire to spread unsubstantiated gossip about this case. So not only might people be keeping quiet in order to protect their own culpability in Claudia's disappearance, they might also be doing so to protect their own personal reputations as well. I personally agree with the theory that Claudia was harmed by someone she knew, but if the authorities are wrong, and she was actually abducted and murdered by a random stranger who did not even live in the area, then this person got extremely lucky that all of the local drama overshadowed the case. But if that's not what happened, then all it might take to solve this is for the right person to come forward. So if you happen to have any information on the disappearance of Claudia Lawrence, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, we covered the bizarre saga of Julie Mott, a young woman who died of cystic fibrosis before her body was stolen from her casket at a funeral home, and it has still not been found. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Nathan R., Deborah S., Kimberly N., Gretchen P., Louis C.W., Jessica C., Sheena M., Roger S., Jill L., and Gina G. Thank you all so much for your support. Just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week, and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold.